This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. The Kent coast was jumpy in September 1801. The customary fear of invasion by France had increased to fever pitch as Napoleon swanned around the European continent, picking off nations pretty much at will, including most of Britain's allies. No wonder people on the Channel shore were casting nervous glances at the French coast, visible on the horizon. When, on the 22nd of September 1801, cannon fire was heard off Margate and Ramsgate, everyone feared the worst. Running in huge numbers, first to the piers and beaches to see if they could see what was going on, then scrambling to secure every coach, gig, cart and wagon in the place to hightail it from the inevitable arrival of Boney and his army. Eventually, somebody twigged the gunfire was just British ships in the Channel, marking the anniversary of King George III's coronation. Everyone calmed down a bit then, and complete strangers who'd been hugging each other in fright sheepishly apologised, released their grip and climbed down from whichever vehicle they'd just dived onto, head first and screaming. Febrile times then, making it understandable that when, a couple of days later, two men had run naked into the bathing rooms at Margate, it caused a bit of a stir. Sea bathing was all the rage at the dawn of the 19th century, but not in the sense that we think of today, frolicking in the waves in leery shorts and going for a 99. Back then, for the genteel classes at least, bathing was about climbing into a dirty, smelly shed on wheels, being rolled into the surf, then plopping fully clothed into the arms of a person employed to grab you, shove your head under the water, then swing you around a bit before sending you back up the ladder into the carriage. And people paid good money for this. It was fashionable. It was good for them. Mind you, these were days when it was also good for you, and fashionable, to drink seawater by the pint. So there's that. On that day at Margate, two men had gone out in a bathing carriage together when a squall blew up, tipping the carriage over and smashing it to pieces in the surf, sending their belongings, including all their clothes, to Davy Jones's locker. They sloshed out of the waves, traumatised and in what can only be described as the altogether, and made for the only plausible haven for two naked blokes in their predicament, the bathing room, where people sat and waited for bathing carriages to become available. Unfortunately, their nearest bathing room was the one reserved for women. Cue pandemonium. The Kentish Courier newspaper takes up the story. Each lady held her fan or gown to her eyes, some guilty of equal indecency, for when they lifted their clothes to hide their faces, they exposed some other part, being too fashionably dressed to have petticoats. Such shrieking and screeking and fainting and scampering and roaring and crying never before occurred in this place. The poor gentleman, shivering, begged for some clothes and a little brandy. "A horsewhip," one older woman cried. "Swimmers from Ramsgate," cried another. "Swimmers from Ramsgate!" Eventually, the now terrified men were rescued by some local gentlemen, who escorted them away from a now enraged mob of women, under the impression the men had swum around the coast from Ramsgate without a stitch on, purely to come and flash them. Ramsgate, you see, and their bathers in particular, was getting a bad press in September 1801. Indeed, the newspaper report of the incident said that when the men entered the bathing room, the women were discussing the essays in a morning paper on the indecency of the bathers at Ramsgate. Margate had traditionally been the more genteel destination of the two neighbouring towns, but Ramsgate had been holding its own. Thomas Reed, in his Directions for Warm and Cold Sea Bathing, with Observations on Their Application and Effects on Different Diseases, published in 1795, with whole chapters on scrofula and eruptions, described Ramsgate as a clean, pleasant village, where the bathing is perfectly safe and convenient, secured from every nuisance issuing from the town by the projection of the pier. Mind you, he also went on to say, the whole of this scene is bounded by a distinct, though distant view of the coast of France, softened down by the intervention of 30 miles of atmosphere. It is left, therefore, to the mind's eye to perceive the atrocious deeds of a people divested of religion and emancipated from law. And this next bit's in capitals. May their pernicious principles be kept at an equal distance with their polluted soil, that this kingdom, happily surrounded with her watery zone, strong by internal peace, equity and justice, may remain free from the calamities that have deluged with blood the neighbouring nations, secure in her invincible navy, the glory of Britain, the envy of the world. Think of his poor wife. Despite the efforts of Ramsgate to promote itself as a seat of good bathing, just prior to the incident, a pamphlet had been doing the rounds excoriating the behaviour of the town's bathers. There was, it said, too much wantoning in the waves, toying with the surf, and indiscriminate mixing of bathing machines. The spectacle prompted instances of ladies put off their guard by loitering on benches, and nursery maids making improper use of the sands. A meeting was called of local bigwigs to discuss what they should do. A list of recommendations was produced that included requiring gentlemen to abstain as much as possible from the exposure of his person on the water. That bathing machine operators be required to provide oilskin pantaloons to bathers, and that effectually to guard the female eye from indecent exposures, ladies, whose health may require attendance on the sands, be requested to wear slouch bonnets or blinders. These proposals were sent to the London newspaper The Morning Post and published above the signature Modestus. 2 days later, there was a response, signed Homo. And Homo had opinions about men. The male class is divided into several orders, of which the principal are first the bathers, properly so denominated, who, bathing for health only, are strict observers of decency. Of the second are the swimmers, who mean only to indulge in their favourite amusement, and, generally speaking, give as little offence to others as possible. The next in order are the sham swimmers, who, under pretence of participating in the delights of swimming, play off all sorts of monkey tricks in the water, always in an awkward and frequently in the most indecent manner. Then follow the inamoratos, who, fallen desperately in love all at once with the surge, scruple not to woo and toy with their new mistress in the open face of day, as if none were present but themselves. The last I shall name are the Belvedere Apollos, who hire a bathing machine for no one purpose but that of displaying their native charms and of shooting their arrows among the beholders, male and female. Homo goes on to suggest that Modestus didn't go far enough, and it might be best if bathing at Ramsgate was suspended altogether. Decency, manners, morals, obedience to the law, civilization, and society are all links in the great chain of human happiness, of which if one only be broken, the whole is destroyed. Women, it was agreed, had the right idea. They descended from their bathing machines into the water surrounded by an awning and wearing an appropriate bathing costume, where dippers would help them in and out. Men, however, according to another correspondent signing himself a clergyman, exposed their persons in the water in a manner highly offensive to decency and repugnant to the salutary purposes of bathing. It's almost as if they were going into the sea just to enjoy themselves. As for women, according to our clerical friend, they cannot remain innocent spectators of indecent acts or appearances, much less ought they obtrude themselves upon either, even through inattention. A modest woman may be said to be off her guard, but should any female of character and honour imprudently suffer herself to be driven in sociables, curricles, or gigs along the edge of the sands or through the surf, in the midst of naked men and boys frolicking without control, let her reflect that she exposes herself and her sex to the derision of libertines, and her conduct to the just censure of that part of the male sex whose good opinions are worth preserving. All this was appearing in the newspapers in the days running up to the pair of naked fellas bursting into the Margate women's bathing room. It was only natural they be assumed to be rapscallions from Ramsgate, that den of briny iniquity. Mind you, Margate wasn't quite the beacon of propriety it made itself out to be. That same year, an anonymous poem was left in a Margate bathing machine, apparently in response to the prevalence of sleazy blokes on the shore. Though oft I have been in a bathing machine, I never discovered till now the wonderful art of this little go-cart. 'Tis vastly convenient, I vow. A peg for your clothes, a glass for your nose, and shutting the little trap-door, you are safe from the ken of those impudent men who wander about on the shore. And that was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. You can read more about the glory days of the bathing machine in my book, The Channel, available in all good bookshops, and other places too, even though they might not be as good. Don't forget, it's a really big help if you can rate and review Coastal Stories wherever you can. Apple, in particular, I'm told. If you're enjoying them, that is. If you're not enjoying the podcast, don't tell anyone. If you've enjoyed this one enough to want to buy me a pint, you can do just that at ko-fi.com. That's ko-fi.com/coastalstories. There's a link in the episode description, wherever you found this, and also pinned to my Twitter page, at Charlie Connolly. I am overwhelmed by the number of people who've donated so far. Thanks so much, everybody. Especially those who've signed up for a monthly donation. You're helping to make Coastal Stories better, because I don't spend it all on pints. These waves were recorded on an ebb tide on Deal Beach on Sunday, October 4th, 2020.